We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College, presented by Harris Teeter, where Tar Heel fans shop for groceries.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. The show is brought to you by, presented by Harris Teeter. Harris Teeter's assisting you with groceries this basketball season. And each week, one winner, just one, is going to get free groceries for every assist through the Big Four Grocery Assist Sweepstakes. Last week's winner hails from Salisbury. It's Margaret. Margaret got her $400 in Harris Teeter gift cards. Margaret, congratulations. HarrisTeeter.com. Look for the Grocery Assist Sweepstakes section to enter. Adam, hello.
That's a lot of gift cards. I get my hopes up every week when you say who the winner is.
Yeah, Adam.
It hasn't been me
that's
yet.
That's right. Normally, Adam's kind of dozing off over there, and then I say, this week's winner, and he pops up. He says, what? Is it me? I've gone to the Grocery Assist Sweepstakes section. But no, Adam.
Not. Margaret was too crafty.
Man, we, Adam, have a lot on this show. We're going to talk about the Virginia game. That wasn't very good. We are going to talk about the fact that the Tar Heels have another game that's been postponed, not planned today as the Tar Heels thought they would be. To help us explain some of that, we're going to bring on a senior associate athletic director here at Carolina, Clint Gwaltney. Clint has been on the show before. Clint is the sport administrator for men's basketball at Carolina. He handles a lot of the scheduling for the Tar Heels, in addition to a lot of other stuff. But he's going to give us the lowdown on just the challenges of trying to get the schedule figured out throughout this season. So we're going to talk to Clint. We also have Adam, all-time Tar Heel wide receiver, one of the best, Hakeem Nix. Hakeem joined us in studio a little more than a week ago, and we had a fun conversation with Hakeem. Great to see him kind of back around Tar Heel football. We talked to him about that, about some of his favorite catches, about winning the Super Bowl, all kinds of fun stuff. And Adam has a list. I have a couple items to add to that list. So what a bonanza.
What an incredible show. We need to get right to it in order to be able to finish this before the sun goes down.
Okay, Adam, let's start with Saturday.
What if we talked about Hakeem Nix some more instead?
You remember that catch Hakeem had against BC that time? I think the frustrating part about Saturday is that that has been a game that the Tar Heels have played in Charlottesville against Virginia many times here in recent years. And it just kind of follows the script of Virginia gets a little bit of a lead. This lead was bigger than in past years. They jumped out to that 21-4 lead. Carolina, to its credit, fought back and got it to 7, the deficit to 7. And then, Adam, after that, as in some past games up there in recent years, the game's kind of sat there between a 9-point deficit for the Tar Heels and a 13 or 14-point deficit. And Carolina was never completely out of the game, but could never really threaten Virginia either. And it just kind of was there, and the clock ran out. And that's what Virginia does to you, and they do it well. So it was not a real attractive game for Carolina, and a frustrating game, again, just in the way that it played out.
I think one of the fun things about sports is that you always feel like you might see something you haven't seen before, or something unpredictable will happen. I've seen that game against Virginia multiple times before. I didn't see anything I hadn't seen before. Really, nothing unpredictable happened. And then the game was over. And as we talked about before the game, if you have a freshman point guard seeing Virginia's defense for the first time, it's probably going to go poorly. That has happened to many other Carolina freshman point guards. It happened to Caleb Love. And Carolina obviously didn't shoot it very well from the perimeter. I think what caused more of a problem in the game was not shooting it better closer to the basket. And that's an area where the Tar Heels should be better.
Yeah, Carolina shot second lowest field goal percentage of the season. Only the Miami game in Coral Gables was worse. Of course, Tar Heels won that game. Lowest point total of the year. I mean, it's been so weird. Last three games, Carolina scored 50, 91, and now 48. Carolina just 2 of 16 from 3, to your point about the struggles on the perimeter. But also, and I don't know what the number, the actual stat was, at some point Carolina was something like 8 of 21 on layups. And I do think, one, Virginia's good defensive team. We understand that. Jay Huff, good shot blocker, came in averaging more than 2 a game, and he blocked 4 in this game. I do think, and Roy Williams alluded to this in the post game, it's almost like when you have just a sliver of daylight in this game, it felt like Carolina rushed a little bit. You know, it's like, oh, I've got to get this shot up right now. And you saw De'Ron Sharp miss a couple of layups in the first half, where, you know, he's had some problems at times this year finishing around the rim. I thought he had gotten a lot better in that here in recent games, but had a couple that he's going to make a large majority of the time that didn't go in. I haven't felt like Kerwin Walton, who was the only Tar Heel to make a 3, he took 6 of them, made 2, and I even thought the ones that he missed were relatively clean looks. He wasn't forcing stuff up, and you're going to take a clean look from Kerwin Walton any possession if you're the Tar Heels right now. But it felt like almost he had that moment of, oh, okay, I've got this look. I better go ahead and shoot this really fast. And he just didn't have certainly not a poor night, but not a terrific night shooting the ball. And so it just felt like that kind of summed up. I thought there was a play, we mentioned this in postgame, Walker Kessler had a really good game, and this didn't decide the game. The game was already decided at this point. But Carolina had a lob to Walker Kessler late in the game where it was open. He caught it and tried to shoot it while he was still in the air instead of just coming down with it because he had taken off a little too far to complete the alley-oop with a dunk. So he like tried to shoot it before he came down, whereas if he had just chilled out for a second, come down, he would have easily been able to go up and dunk it. I just thought that kind of summed up Carolina's offensive day of it wasn't necessarily that the Heels were, you know, taking fall-away 19-footers every possession, but it just... things were sped up just enough that they weren't finishing at the efficient rate that you would like to, especially with the length from the basket in which Carolina was shooting a majority of its shots.
Carolina finished 13 for 28 on layups or dunks. And some, it's not like all those layups were like, I'm dribbling down the court uncontested and I just softly finger roll it in. But those are the closest shots you're going to get. So if you're shooting less than 50% on the closest shots you're going to get, the way Carolina plays, it's going to be difficult to win a game against a team like Virginia. And the Tar Heels didn't, and Virginia, as we talked about before, is a better shooting team this year, and they showed it because they shot it really well from three and from the free throw line, which kind of subtly Carolina didn't do well again. It wouldn't have made a difference in the game, but A, Carolina didn't get there very much, and B, when they got there, they didn't make them.
Yeah, I mean, Walker Kessler was 3 for 4. The rest of the team was 3 of 8 from the free throw line. And that's four straight games now where the Tar Heels are right around 50% as a team from the line. That's not good. And, I mean, Roy Williams, a big part of his philosophy is getting to the free throw line. And it doesn't do you any good if you can't, and certainly you don't have to shoot 90%, but if you shot 70%, it's a little different than 50%. And to your point, I don't think it's cost, those low numbers have not cost Carolina a game at this point. In fact, I think maybe it's 5 games, not 4, that they're right around, because it was State, it was Clemson, it was Duke, it was this one against Virginia. Am I missing a game somewhere in there? Can't remember.
It's hard to know when the games fall this year because they don't always occur.
But so it hasn't necessarily cost Carolina a game. It almost did in Durham, but we'll see. That's a number that obviously has to improve. One more thing about the game, and then we'll talk about the Virginia Tech game getting postponed. Walker Kessler did have some nice moments in this game, and Adam, we've seen that a couple of times this year, where you can, and we've said it here, you can see, I think, what Walker Kessler is going to become. He's not quite there yet, but he's just so darn tall and long and hustles and has a nice shooting touch, which we haven't seen a ton this year. You can see what is so attractive as a player about Walker Kessler, and I think he's going to be somebody that's going to play a big role for the Tar Heels moving forward. Not necessarily here over the last month of this season, although you hope that he does, but I think certainly in the next year or two, he's going to be somebody who is a key part of what the Tar Heels try to do.
I thought it spoke really well to him and to his mental toughness that he did make 3 out of 4 free throws, because that has been an area where he has been poor.
Well, and the one that he missed was really, really an ugly miss, and he came right back and knocked in the next one, which I always think is good to see.
Right, and so I think that shows you that he's worked on things, even though he's not attempting 8 free throws a game. He clearly has been working on it. We've seen him working on it. And I think the one thing about him that he will do every single time is whatever Roy Williams tells him to do, he will do it to the absolute maximum of his ability. Does that mean it will be successful every time? Not right now. But he came in because Garrison Brooks had missed a box out. Just completely whiffed on a box out. And you saw Roy Williams turn right around to Walker Kessler and I'm sure say, get in there and box out. And that's what he did. So, as has been well documented, Carolina's got plenty of post players, but I truly believe Walker Kessler is a key part of next year and beyond.
9 points, 5 rebounds in 11 and a half minutes for Walker Kessler. By far the most effective player in this game for Carolina.
In which Carolina didn't have a player in double figures.
First time since the 60s that Carolina's had a game, and the first time since the 40s that they had a game where there wasn't an intentional stall during the game that they didn't have a player in, at least one, in double figures.
The 66 game was 21-20 against Duke when Carolina held the ball because Duke was third in the country and Carolina wasn't good, and so they just held it. And before that, you go back to 1949. Thank you, Jody Zeugner. So it had been 2,175 straight games that Carolina had somebody in double figures. That's a lot of games. Every game ever played with the three-pointer, Carolina had somebody in double figures until Saturday. You just don't see stuff like that. But, well, so look, there's something that was unpredictable that happened, Jones. Shut my mouth.
Yeah.
That's not the kind of thing I wanted to see.
You know the kind of thing I don't want to see? I don't want to see you letting your outside chores or projects cause you to miss any Tar Heel game action this season. Well, there's an answer for that, Adam. two letters in a word, LS Tractor. Just going to make short work of them. Normal yard maintenance, larger projects too. LS Tractor has the machine for you. Visit LSTractorUSA.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? So, Adam, I thought the bigger disappointment of the day was Carolina losing the game against Virginia Tech. And by losing, I mean the game getting postponed. You're starting to hit critical level here for the Tar Heels in the games that they are unable to currently play for multiple reasons. That's now three games the Heels have lost in conference play. All three of them have been at home. I think Carolina would have been favored at least in two of the three games, maybe in all three. The Tar Heels need wins. The Tar Heels need home games. And they're losing all of these opportunities, whereas somehow the games that stay on the schedule are the ones where the Tar Heels are underdogs and going on the road. And so, I mean, they've played four straight games on the road, and it's just been, man, it's been a big, big challenge. Now, Virginia Tech's a good team. I'm not suggesting that the ball would have rolled out there and Carolina would have easily won the game, but I do think you like Carolina's chances in the Smith Center in that game compared to if it was in Blacksburg, and you lose the opportunity again. And for whatever reason, even though Miami doesn't have a game in the midweek and the Tar Heels don't have a game in the midweek, and it would logically make sense for those two teams to make up the game that they lost, it doesn't seem like there's a whole lot of interest in making that game up from one of those two entities. And I don't think it's the Tar Heels, since they sent out a tweet basically saying, hey, is there any team that wants to play this week? We'd love to play.
Anybody want to play?
Yeah. Hey, we got a ball.
Anybody want to play? We got a gym.
So I just think that's the disappointing. That's been the biggest disappointing thing to me, Adam, over these last couple of weeks, is all these games that the Tar Heels aren't able to play. We knew that this Tar Heel team was going to be up and down and continuing to get better. Saturday's game didn't change my thoughts on this Tar Heel team and what they are and where they are and all those things. But it's, you know, now, at least as of you and I talking at this moment, they're not scheduled to play again until Saturday again. Another full week of just sitting and waiting. And, you know, Coach Williams has talked about this. You know, they've practiced more than 70 times and they've played 19 games, six of which have been at home. And so at some point you want to play the games. And Carolina just hasn't had as many opportunities as you would like.
Yeah, I think the key word is opportunity. Because let's say if Carolina played Virginia Tech, that's an opportunity for us to learn more about this Carolina team that we honestly don't know a ton about, because they're right on that fringe of, are they a top-tier ACC team? We don't know, because they never get to play the games that would tell us the answer. We know they're not as good right now as Virginia at Virginia. We already knew that. We know they're better than Wake Forest at the Smith Center. We already knew that. You've got to play some of those middle-of-the-pack teams to establish what you are. And I think the other concerning factor from the Tar Heel perspective is the resume just isn't very complete when you start thinking about NCAA tournament possibilities. You just haven't had a chance to put a lot on paper. And that's why I think, well, it's incredible that Miami's going to sit at home this week and not play a game. And it's incredible that no one's going to tell them they should come play.
Well, and before you get all worked up, because I can see it coming, which I like, I'm going to say that's twice now this year that Carolina had an open spot in the schedule that another team in the league also had an open spot in the schedule that would have made sense for those two teams to play. It happened in late January when Carolina didn't play, after Pitt and pre-Clemson, when Louisville also had the weekend off. Those two teams could have played. And then now, where Carolina and Miami are both off, a game that was on the schedule that for whatever reason isn't being played. That's twice now that something that makes sense was avoided, and it's curious as to why that is the case.
In this year, you can't have teams sitting there not playing when they could be playing. And this year, you've got to play games. We've said that since the start of football. And so and we've also said this since the start of basketball. This schedule made no sense from the start. There should have been an open week in February that you just plan for games to be postponed. There's 1 week in February, and that would have actually generated interest, like with BYU playing Coastal in football.
Right.
People like it when you're flexible and you put together attractive matchups on short notice, especially this year. Leave a week open in February, and once you get to February 1st, say, all right, guys, what games do we need to make up? Here's what we're going to fill in this open week. Off we go. It's mind-boggling that that wasn't thought of. But whatever, it wasn't, or I guess it was thought of. TV probably told them not to. Everybody loses. But so now Carolina's sitting here with this open week and this resume that really needs a couple positive points on it. There's three teams in quad one that would be a quad one game at home, which is 1-30 in the net. Jones.
Yeah, keep talking, Adam. Should I play the Pot After Dark music right here?
Villanova. We know Roy Williams and Jay Wright like each other. They scrimmage sometimes back in the day of the secret scrimmage, which was a whole year ago. And this whole discussion may be moot by the time you hear this. West Virginia, old Bobby Huggins and the Mountaineers, and Creighton. Mm. I'm against that one. But Carolina needs – you need to play some quad one games just so we know something about this team. And those are the three who are off this week that would be a quad one game at the Smith Center. Not talking about on the road, because Carolina's already said they're not going on the road, nor should they.
No.
And that's why, you know, the other possibility is Notre Dame from an ACC perspective, but you'd have to go on the road. It's staggering when you think about the difference in how that first Carolina-Notre Dame game came about, which was basically Roy Williams and Mike Bray just going, hey, let's do this. Versus the Carolina-Miami game not happening. That's a very stark difference in the way those two things were handled.
So, again, we're going to, in just a moment, bring on Clint Gwaltney, who sport administrator for Carolina men's basketball. Clint does a bunch of things for men's basketball, including handling the scheduling aspect of things. And so we're going to talk to him about just some of the challenges of trying to get a schedule put together this year, kind of what happens when a game gets postponed. We'll talk to him about all of that coming up in just a second. And again, things may have changed. We don't know. Since by the time Adam and I are talking and by the time you get a chance to listen to this, maybe Tar Heels have found an opponent. Unclear. But as of us speaking right now, Saturday against Louisville is the next chance for the Tar Heels to play.
There's no guarantee you find one. Carolina women's basketball was looking for a game last week and never got one.
Yeah.
And I think it probably comes down to, are you looking for any game or are you looking for a game that potentially helps you? I think Carolina can find a game, but I think the Tar Heels would rather have a helpful game. And so we'll see what they're able to get. They may end up with just a game, but I do think if it comes down to a game or no game, Roy Williams wants a game.
Yeah, I think you take the game.
Yeah, you want to play.
Okay.
Unless you're another team.
Why don't we get to our conversation with Clint? We'll go right from that to our Hakeem Nicks interview and then come back out of that and we'll go through the back half of the show. Adam, it was, since we will handle things that way, it was good to talk to Hakeem. You know, he had... There were some rocky moments between Hakeem Nicks and Carolina football when everything was going down with the Tar Heel football program a decade ago or whenever it was. Good to see that relationship, I think, is mended. And as you'll hear Hakeem say, I don't think he ever necessarily had negative feelings. Good to see that relationship has mended. He has been very generous with the football program. The wide receivers room is named after Hakeem Nicks. We talk about that some. Just a really pleasant guy who has who's also an excellent football player.
And if it doesn't come through hearing him talk about it, we can tell you from talking to him off the air, he loves the Heels.
Yeah, he does.
And so it was awesome to see just how strongly he feels about Carolina and about Carolina football.
And by the way, what fashion game Hakeem Nicks had when he joined us.
Yeah, he had the whole look put together.
So I know we retweeted a picture that Hakeem had tweeted out when he was here with us. So he had on, he wasn't wearing the hat because he's a gentleman,
right,
Adam, but he had a Carolina blue hat. He was wearing this sweatshirt. I've never seen it before. And it's a good looking sweatshirt. Now he can pull it off. The first top half of it was white, bottom half Carolina blue. Then he had white jeans on and Carolina blue. Were they Jordans? They probably
were. Yeah, they were Jordan 11s with the Carolina blue patent leather.
I mean, so it was like, it was the perfect alternating Carolina blue and white. I mean, Keem Nicks had given this some thought, obviously.
Well, he's going to be on the pod.
He was coming to Chapel Hill, and he was going to rep the heels, and he did it well.
Yep.
Okay, so you're going to hear Clint. We'll go straight from Clint to Keem Nicks, and we'll come out of Keem Nicks, and we'll get to the rest of the show here on the Carolina Insider.
So this is how the life is going for this guest. Whenever something happens in Carolina basketball land, I just text him chapter 15 or 16 or whatever we're on now, because I feel like these last 9 months for Clint Gwaltney will eventually be part of a book that no one will believe ever really happened, but it did. And so this week, Clint, I think, might be about chapter 18 or 19, and we're only in mid-February. How's things going?
Well, things are not great because we do not have opponent currently for this week. As you're well aware, we lost our third home game that was supposed to be played tomorrow night, Tuesday, and we are looking to try to find an opponent to play, and currently the only ACC opponent that is willing to play us is Notre Dame, but they've already come down here and we're not scheduled to go up there. So we are looking with the blessing of the conference. We are looking for a possible non-conference opponent to play here either maybe Wednesday or Thursday night. And again, we have tried to reach out to the schools that we had contracts with this year that had to cancel. And Wilmington's on pause, and UNC Asheville is on pause. And then we realized East Carolina was supposed to play Houston on Wednesday night because Houston's on pause, and we call East Carolina, and they're on pause. Mm. So it is a crazy world out there, and we're just seeing if we can find an opponent to get some rhythm going for our basketball team.
So, Clint, what happens when a game gets postponed? How do you guys find out about it? What is the communication? What all occurs when a change has to be made?
Well, the first, I guess, the best one was, I believe it was Syracuse we were supposed to play on January 2nd, and I get a phone call on New Year's Eve at about noon that says Syracuse is going on pause, and we're not sure what's going to happen. And then by 4 o'clock, we were playing Notre Dame in the Smith Center in 48 hours. And, like, I can't say enough positive things about Notre Dame, Mike Bray, Jim Frawley, and their willingness to be flexible and do what is right for this league with a lot of integrity. And it's been a joy to work with them. But you can get it. You know, I got the call from Clemson about when they had to postpone the game. Came straight from my counterpart at Clemson. With the Virginia Tech situation, it was medical doctor to medical doctor and then up through ADs and then to me. So there's a lot of different ways that it can happen. You know, it's but we try to keep it as streamlined as we can, and we work with the league, and it depends. Different programs have different people that reach out, but it's definitely a communication tree.
When you have games in hand that you know need to be rescheduled, are you just constantly throwing out days like me trying to get a date in high school? Like, hey, what about Tuesday? Oh, you're busy. What about Wednesday? Or does it – how does that work?
I'm surprised anybody said no to you, Adam. But yes, and so you do. And you work with the league. And again, like I called Matt Roberts down at Charleston to see what's going on with the CAA and their scheduling, called Wes Miller to talk about the Southern Conference. And again, everybody's league has had games canceled, so they're trying to squeeze conference games in when they can. So there's not as many open dates for everybody to find a time to make these games up. I mean, we're still there's been discussion of us trying to play a game on March the 3rd between our Monday night game and our Saturday game against Duke, because that's kind of an open window. And we still have Virginia Tech, Clemson, Miami, who we're supposed to be able to play. And we were hopeful to play Miami this week, and they did not it didn't fit into their schedule to return the game.
Clint, do you think that this will change the way moving forward that scheduling works? And by that, I mean both in football and in basketball, especially in football, stuff is scheduled so far out. But then we've seen stuff that you can be a little more flexible when your hand is forced. Do you think scheduling will change at all or not change at all from this?
I don't see it changing for basketball. I think the football, I mean, I saw one today where Notre Dame is going to the Swamp maybe in 2032 or right. 2059. I can't tell. And, I mean, that just boggles my brain that we do schedule. Because, I mean, for men's basketball, the only things that we really schedule that far out are more like special events, like, you know, you're going to the Bahamas tournament in 3 years or Maui in 4 years or the CBS Sports Classic, which is going on, things like that. But other than that, everything's 1 year, maybe two max. So I don't think, I mean, the one thing that I think is needs to happen is that, you know, this pandemic needs to go away and yeah. there's, and the conference games that are scheduled, you play. Cause that's a struggle for everybody. So I don't think there'll be as much, like in football where they threw some things together, that Coastal Carolina BYU game, I believe it was, that everybody loved. That's great. But I don't think that's going to change much in basketball going forward.
So, and one of the weirdest things that's happened in a weird year, Carolina basketball put out a tweet that said, "We're looking for a home game." When you put out a tweet that says North Carolina basketball is looking for a home game, what kind of response do you get? Like, do you get calls from actual teams wanting to play?
Let me bring out my sheet of paper that has the teams that called back and their net rankings and everything else. One of the best we got was West Texas A&M University Division II left me a voicemail. Nice man called and said, "We will be there on Wednesday. Don't know what you're looking for, but we will be there." You know, there's some people that called and said, "Hey, we will come, but it's a home and home, and we're not in a position to do that right now." So it is interesting, and we cast a wide net to see what was out there, and you know, we hopefully can come to an agreement with one of these teams and have a game Wednesday or Thursday night, and just get our guys some you know, it's to get them out there, and you know, taking it's for football, it's great to go Saturday. For basketball, it's right. You need some rhythm, you know, and so we played Saturday and then lost the Miami game, and then we played Saturday and then we lose the Virginia Tech game, and now we're supposed to play Saturday. And so we're just really trying to get somebody on the court that, you know, wants to come to the Smith Center and play, and we're hopeful that we can find that here in the next 2 to 3 hours.
Clint, couple more things before we let you go, and appreciate you doing this. Adam and I are big dummies, of course. We don't know how any of this works. We can just throw out random comments and have no actual idea of if it's possible. So why didn't something like this, one of our dumb comments, happen? Like, when this schedule was made, and I'm not saying North Carolina, just the overall schedule, why did the league not say, "Okay, guys, we're going to leave this 1 week open," but understanding that everybody's going to play, assuming that they've got some games that need to be made up. We just don't know who it is just yet, but here's this 1 week that we're going to try and leave open to try to catch up. Or why was there not, as the whole schedule came out, some stretches of emptiness in those schedules for everybody so that you could have the ability to find some areas to have flexibility?
I think all in all, it just boils down to television time slots, and that those are set so far in advance prior to ever having any kind of COVID or pandemic. And so as a league, they're doing everything in their scheduling power to try to make, you know, fit in as many time slots as possible. Same thing as we did as a league in football. You're trying to get as many, you know, league games on television as you can. And again, you know, we have our television partners and they're great to us, and we try to return the favor and be great to them and get as many games in those slots that we can. I mean, I think that, let's see, at least two of our three games were ESPN time slots. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's an important window. That's, you know, it's not only good for our relationship with television, but it's good for our kids to be getting that national exposure and our program to get that national exposure. I mean, again, our, you know, we're 12-7 now. You know, and it's crazy. The league right now is not getting a lot of respect out there nationally. You've got the other day I watched Kansas play. Gosh, who were they playing? And one was 12 in West Virginia. I believe it was Kansas, West Virginia. One was 12-6, one was 12-5, and they were ranked 23rd and 17th in the country. And at that point in time, we were 12-6. And we're not ranked and not looking being looked favorably upon. And I think if you go back and look at our record and see where we lost to Iowa at Iowa, Texas, neutral floor, at Georgia Tech, who's playing really well, mm-hmm. at Virginia now. I mean, it's again, I think our I would put our resume up against anybody. And so I think, you know, we just will have to see. But I think television, you know, again, we say it all the time, but I think television is the reason the schedule is what it is.
So you obviously work closely with Coach Williams in trying to build a schedule traditionally. What are some of the things that he, like, what are some of the things where you say, Clint, I am hoping to achieve this with this schedule, or these are the kind of things that we're trying to do with how we play?
Well, I mean, a lot of it for coaches is relationships, and it's, you know, so-and-so has called and wants to play, and he remembers him from 15 years ago, and let's play him. That's a good program and a good, you know, young man coach. Or, and I think a lot of it for coaches is relationships. It's not, you know, it's not a – I mean, we are the University of North Carolina, and people typically want to play us. So it's not a strategy where at some schools you're really digging deep into the, you know, we need this net ranking so that we can get a win and get a quad one win, right, and move up. And again, you look at that stuff, but I think when we're building the schedule, I mean, you know, Coach Williams will tell you, I mean, we've got 20 league games plus the ACC Big Ten Challenge plus the CBS Sports Classic. I mean, that's 22, you know, quality games right there. So if you go out and play, and, you know, one of my new favorites is Our Lady of the Lake, you know, who Houston played the other day. I mean, you know, it's going to bring your overall net down. But, you know, if coach has a relationship, that's a lot of what we work off on who we play.
All right, last thing. Where'd you get the Cokes that have our names on them? This is the most important question that you will answer. You see where they're prominently displayed, one level up right there on those, right up there.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Well, I had a case of Coke Zero, and those were two of the ones that
really?
Were in the case. There it was. It's that simple.
So the Jones edition is just in the case.
Yeah, I like that. I like that it's starting to become more mainstream now.
You and John Grisham did that.
Yeah, we made that happen. Clint, thank you. Appreciate your time as always, man. Thanks for the insight, and always good to see you. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Pretty simple today. We got one of the best players in the history of Carolina football with us, and I was feeling really good about how much Hakeem Nicks must like Jones and I.
Yep.
Because he came up just to hang out with us, and I thought, man, he must think we're awesome. And then I found out he's got three kids, and I realized why he wanted to get out of the house a little bit. And I don't feel quite as awesome as I did. But, Hakeem, we really appreciate you coming by.
Hey, man, thanks for having me, man. Anytime I'm back on the campus, man, I love it, man. I love the atmosphere.
What's going on in the life of Hakeem Nicks right now?
Man, you know, since football, you know, started up my family. Got kids, as you said. I got another baby on the way as well. You know, so training as well. I got some young athletes I trained in my local area. And, in Charlotte, that's my way of, you know, giving back to the younger guys, keeping them on the field. I do that about 3 days a week. You know, I got about 5 to 7 guys I took a liking to stay in my area that, you know, I just, you know, deal with them on a personal level as far as football go. And, man, I just try to give back, you know, the best way I can. Still spend a lot of time with my family, parents, you know, siblings as well, when we can through these trying times, and just keeping my faith strong. And, man, just put my best foot forward every day.
All right, Hakeem, when you are training a young athlete, because you're Hakeem Nicks, you could do all of this stuff. It just was natural to you.
Right.
When you're trying to train somebody and help them and coach them and teach them, does that get frustrating when they can't do it the way that you think that it should be done?
I don't think it's frustrating. I think that's where I get a kick out of it at, you know, because I like teaching.
Sure.
So, you know, if I see them, you know, like the form, you know, I work with wide receiver skill positions as well. So I'm teaching them little techniques, little, you know, little cheating techniques the wide receivers got. You know, they're like, man, you got all the cheat techniques, coach. I'm like, yeah, man, you know, can't show nobody this, though.
That's right.
I keep it for you.
That's how you become a Super Bowl champion. You got to know that kind of stuff.
Right.
Who's the best teacher you had?
Oh, man. I would have to date it back to high school when I really, really started picking up my craft. Because at first, you know, I was just an athlete. I played football. And I probably stepped into the wide receiver realm my senior year, you know, because I was a tight end slash receiver, you know, played kickoff. I was just all over the field in high school all the way up to my senior year. Junior year started peaking, like, okay, I had a few touchdowns, I might could do this, you know. And then senior year came on strong, and Coach Tommy Knotts, you know, he played a big role in bringing me up here to Carolina. And my wide receiver coach from high school as well, Steve Shipp, he taught me all the crafts from being a wide receiver, because he had played for Coach Knotts as well. Then he went on to Florida to play, and he came back to give back to the community in Charlotte, and got with me when I was in 9th or 10th grade, and kind of taught me the crafts of a receiver going into 11th grade, and kind of transformed my mentality and my confidence. And, you know, I stepped into that starting role my senior year, and, you know, they put me in that position, and I just took off with it.
What's a little trick?
I'm going to move this mic just a little bit, Akeem. There you go. All right.
Yep.
What's a little trick that when you see a wide receiver do, you think, oh, that guy's been well-coached. He knows what he's doing. He's got the whole bag of tricks.
Right. So I focus on technique and craftiness, you know, in and out your breaks at the top of the route. If you're giving a little something extra in your route, or focus on releases. You know, when you're running and, you know, football, your athletic ability is supposed to take over. You know, it's just little cheating techniques you could help out and, you know, teach them, hey, if you got to step on this guy right here, you know, do this way. Or if you get to the top of the route and he's on your inside, kind of nudge him this way and go the other way. And, you know, just teach him little stuff like that. Or when you come out, when you line up, first thing you're supposed to identify is those safeties, because the safety is going to tell you the coverage. And then you go from the safeties to read the DB technique. He going to tell you if he bailing, or if he flat-footed, or if he's sitting, if it's some type of zone. So you go from read the safeties to the DB, and 9 out of 10, you're going to be able to dissect that coverage.
Who's somebody who you think is really good right now? Like, who's somebody you watch on the pro level and go, man, that guy's got the total package?
Right now, one of my we're talking receivers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right now, one of my top receivers in the game right now was Hopkins.
Yep.
I like his style. Yeah, I like his style a lot. I've been liking him for a while, his game. And I like Diggs. You know, I always liked him, but this year he got a chance to, like, showcase, you know, a little bit more, because it was just a different situation for him. So I think he got to showcase his skills a lot. And this is actually what me and my young guys be talking about, too. They be asking me, like, who your top five, coach? Who your top five? So who after that? I like Tyreek Hill, you know, just because he's an athlete.
Yep.
You know, you can't leave him out of that top five. He's been proven, you know, time and time.
You like Davante Adams?
How can I forget him? He's definitely in my top five. Yeah, he's one-on-one, can't check him. You got to double him. You got to roll that coverage, and he still might win.
All right, okay, so I'm looking at the Tar Heel record books right here. Receiving yards, Akeem Nicks number 2 all-time in career. First for a single season. And then you're looking at receptions, Akeem Nicks number 3 for a career, number 3 for a single season. When you think about how the game is now compared to when you played – here, you know, 10, 12 years ago, do you think, man, what would those numbers be if Akeem Nicks was a wide receiver right now compared to in 2009?
Oh, man, yeah, them spread offenses, something serious. Man, they putting up video game numbers.
It's crazy.
Here, yeah, but that's just the way the game transforming. That go to show you that the game is going to keep evolving and just to better itself. So if I was in one of these offenses, man, I'd probably still be number one.
So move that name up a little bit.
You know, but look, keep
get out of here, Ryan Switzer.
Those records was in 3 years, too.
That's right.
You got to multiply it out and add a fourth year.
Yeah, that's right. Add
a fourth year now, it would have been, I'd still be number one in some of them.
All right, take us back to your Carolina days. Of course, it got crazy there at the end with everything going on, but take us back what happened in your time in Chapel Hill and just your memories from playing here at Carolina.
Man, I got nothing but good memories here. I was actually, once everything started going left, I was actually with the Giants by then. So I didn't really catch with of that. I just heard, you know, the he say, she say and whatnot. And I just kind of stayed away till it all cleared up and, you know, just tried to, you know, protect my name as best as possible. But as far as my experience here, man, I loved it. You know, that's why I took this trip to come back today. You know, I loved, man, the whole, you know, atmosphere of Carolina, just being around, and the facility, man, is top of the line. I wish we would have had this new indoor Jordan facility.
Yeah, it's incredible.
The football team got now, man, but you know, they got a lot going on, man. I'm very excited about where the program is headed, and I'm still the number one Tar Heel fan.
So, the bowl game in Charlotte, I remember being at the game, and Hakeem Nicks caught a pass, and I thought, well, I can't wait to get home and see what really happened on that play. Because, you know what, it sure looked like he caught it behind his back, but I know he didn't really do that. Then I got home, and he did catch it behind his back. Take us through that play and what happened and what you were thinking.
All right, so it happened way faster than it did in my mind. You know, in my mind, it was slow. But when you go look at it, it was within a second. But just running across the middle was a shallow cross, and I think this was the time where – you know, I ain't really know how to read zone and man at the time, so I was really supposed to be sitting. TJ threw it to where I was supposed to stop at, and I kept going, so I just reached my left hand back, and, you know, the size of my hand, it just kind of stuck, and I was like, okay, let me go behind my back. But first, I was going to try to go between my legs. I was like, oh, no, I don't fit. Let me go around the back. And I really had time to think about all of that, and then, you know, once it passed to the other hand, I said, oh, I got it. And then I came out and I spent. But if you pay attention, I got a good lick on me right to the chin, right off of that spin move. So I was like, oh, he got me. I was more so worried about the hit, you know, than the catch. And then I was like, dang, did I just do that? And then, you know, history was made.
When that happens, do you go back in the huddle and sneak a look up at the video board and see, let me just see what I just did?
I can't remember if I did that or not.
Look, he just said he got hit in the chin, Adam.
Making sure you're in the right huddle.
Right, I was making sure. Hey, Butch Davis just picked me up and said, take a playoff. Take the next playoff.
What was Coach Davis like to play for?
He was fun, man. He was enthusiastic. Had energy, great energy. And every coach that he brought with him brought great energy, too. You know, he's the type of guy that'll give you the shirt off his back. You know, Butch was a great guy, cared about his players. Always wanted to make sure we was in the right situations. Told us when we was wrong, too. You know, we got behind in some classes or, you know, we missed a class or two. He going to let us know. He going to pull us to the side, especially if you was the leader. He'll pull you to the side and, hey, man, you looked at in this light. We need you to do better in this. And you know, we took that to a high regard because he showed us that he cared.
What do you know about Mac Brown? What is your relationship with Coach Brown?
Man, Coach Brown is cool, man. I love him, man. I think he's the reason why, you know, I got to start coming back around a little bit more. Once I started talking to him and, you know, started reaching back out to me and stuff, I was psyched about it. I already knew his resume.
Yeah.
So, you know, once he was coming back, I said, okay, we about to be headed back to the right direction now.
Carolina is obviously important to you. What did it mean to you when you did start hearing from him and he made it clear, hey, we want you around?
Well, it meant a lot, actually. Man, shout out to Brian Chakos, too, man. Chakos was he's the one. He came down to Charlotte. We had a few alumni meetings, Rams Club meetings, and he invited me to a few of those dinners. That's how it all started. Mm-hmm. And then we just got, you know, start talking a little bit about, you know, the past and, you know, a little bit of the future. And you know, you're like, man, we really want you to start, you know, coming around. I'm like, man, I want to be around. You know, is it okay yet? You know, is the fire out? You know what I mean? Is it safe to walk back in the house? And he's like, man, we good, man. We love you. You know, Mac Brown, love you. You know, want to see you around. Want you to come up and talk to the guys. And I was like, man, shoot, that's lit. Let's do it.
Yeah. How did it I would have to think that was, and as you said, your life was in a different place. You were playing professional football. You were doing different stuff. But I had to imagine that hurt a little bit, right? To be like, to have your name associated the way that it was and to hear the things that you did.
Definitely did, but I knew it was just something out of my control. I knew that, you know, someone, a group higher up came, and it was over, you know, the university head as well. So I was wise enough to know that. So I just kind of stood my ground and, you know, stayed in my place, and I'm back here today.
Take us through playing in New York. Because I have to imagine that's quite an experience.
Top of the line. That's the top of the line, classy organization. I thank them, you know, for giving me the opportunity to draft me in the first round. And glad I got a Super Bowl from them, because it's easy to it's easy to think back now. And, you know, you're looking back and you're like, okay. Because, you know, at first I walked away from the game at, you know, 27, you know, but due to injuries and whatnot, you know, I was like 7 surgeries in. Yep. You know, I was like, man, I got to be able to live after football. So it started, you know, coming to the end of the road, and I was like, all right, this is, you know, this is happening now. You know, football is over with, so what's next? And I kind of, you know, the first year or two was tough. I was like, man, I'm ready to compete. I was going to basketball court trying to dunk on people still. I was just ready to compete. And, you know, I'm just, you know, still floating around from football fields, you know, doing my things, just being an athlete. And, you know, with that being said, man, I think that, you know, me being in the position that I'm in today, I'm just thankful for it, you know, and I'm thankful that I'm here today.
What's daily life like in New York City when you're a starting wide receiver for the New York Giants? You just had 10 catches in the Super Bowl, and you're a Super Bowl champion.
Hey, that was awesome. You know, going into the game, you know, every receiver, you know, you want to be that leading receiver. You want to be the receiver to make the catch. You want to be the receiver to make the winning touchdown. You just want to be that guy. And that's what I like, my mentality going into it. First off, it was a little emotional at the beginning of the game, because knowing where I came from, and I was like, yo, I'm in a Super Bowl. Like, I'm standing in the middle of the field in the Super Bowl. And it was like a surreal moment. And then I was just like, yo, they have to. You know, my mentality is like, I die on this field. You know what I mean? Like, that was just my mentality. You know, that's football. So I was just like, man, I'm ready. I'm ready to play. And it showed with my actions. I went out there. I was just like, focus on the catch. You know, focus on the catch. Yep. And everything else would come. I ain't want to have no drops. I ain't want to, you know, had a little mishap with that fumble, but our team recovered it. So that was probably my scariest moment. And I had Coach Knotts in the stands, and he told me before the game, because he knew the way I hold the ball, you know, with my hands. So he was like, oh, keep that ball high and tight. This is the Super Bowl. Keep the ball high and tight. I was like, all right, Coach, I got you. All right. And I go out there and put it high and tight, and boop. I said, man, let me hold this ball like I know how to hold this ball.
I'm going to do the way I want to do this. What's Eli Manning like?
Eli, cool, man. It's a crazy thing. So I was about to screenshot Manning drive and send it to him. Like, look, man, you in Chapel Hill too. But I talked to Easy like about 3 weeks ago. We always chime in. We talk about once or twice a month.
Did he invite you to his retirement party?
Oh yeah, I was up there. I was all in the mix.
What was that like? Because that was a pretty, it wasn't like a big shindig, it was a small thing for important people to have.
Yeah, it was. I was honored that I got the call, but kind of like, you sure you ready to retire, bro? You know what I'm saying? Like, you still throwing that thing about 60, 70 yards accurately too. And, you know, but you know, once a giant, always a giant.
So I want to go back to when you decided it was done. Like, I have to imagine that's tough, because as you said, you were still relatively young in football terms. What was the ultimate thing that you said, you know what, this is, I just can't anymore?
I think that last rant I gave when I went to the Saints for that week, and I was there, and I don't think I enjoyed waking up going to I started saying work.
Yeah,
that's the difference. I was saying when I first hit the league, I was like, I'm going to practice. I'm going to play, you know, ball. And then it got to the age where I started saying, all right, I got to get up and go to work. And I'm like, hold up, that changed. I ain't used to say that. And you had to start paying attention to yourself, because, you know, you'll let yourself know something if you're paying attention to you. So it's kind of like looking in the mirror. So I had to face that. Then I was like, all right, then They was like, hey, can you run down here on this kickoff? I'm like, kickoff? Okay, I know where this going.
So this ain't senior year in high school anymore now.
Okay, all right, now I ain't eighth year in the league. I ain't never played no kickoff, no nothing. Okay, yes. I don't know if I could do that. So let me beat him. You know, I practiced it, did it a few times. Then by like day 7, we was about to go see the Patriots. And I was like, yeah, I can't be running down on no kickoff in the preseason. You know, it was just in my mind. I just couldn't get over it. I was like, man, nah, I done had 7 surgeries. You know, I could see if it was the team and it wasn't training camp.
Right.
You know, we had a bunch of young guys. I feel like they could have handled that. But that's another story. But, you know, that's when I realized for me that, like, all right, you know, they kind of shifting you on up out of here. You know, pay attention to the signs. Don't keep, you know, don't go against the flow of the river. Just kind of go with it.
Who's the guy who, when you looked across the line of scrimmage and you knew he was covering you, you knew it was going to be a difficult day?
Honestly, I used to focus on the whole defense, like the whole secondary. I ain't used to just focus on like a corner. Unless I knew I was going in and it was just me and him, and that was rare. They only let a guy like Aqib Talib match up on me like that, and you seen what happened when that happened. Had 200 yards. So that was the only time they let something like that happen. Revis in his prime, he was locked down. You had to worry about him. When they was calling him Revis Island and all that, he was really doing it. Other than that, it was just a bunch of smart players that knew how to play within their scheme. You know, like Asante Samuel. You know, I used to, when I was younger, having to go against the Eagles, I was like, dang, I can't stand playing him. He used to mix up the coverage. He used to show cover 2 when it was cover 1, show cover 4 when it was cover 1 press. You know what I'm saying? Jump inside and steal the little hook route. You know what I'm saying? And it's your job to keep him outside, and he always knew that play was coming. I was like, Coach, just stop calling that play. He know it every time. He know it every time.
What is it? What does it take to become an NFL player, not just somebody who is good at football, but take that next step and be somebody that succeeds at that level? Because not many people get a chance to do that. We've talked to guys who have played at that level. I'd just be interested in your opinion on kind of what is that separator between guys who make it and guys who don't?
I think it's that it factor. You know, you got to have it. Whatever it is,
right?
You got to have it. And it's that it factor. You know, that's the difference in going first round and going sixth round and just getting a try. You know what I mean? So sometimes we're reluctant enough to be in a position, but you got some guys that's, you know, that really can't handle that position. So if you're a type of guy that can handle that position, then and you're reluctant enough to handle it, then I think you got the right shoes on your feet.
You talked about before the Super Bowl, thinking about where you had come from and how you got there. I want to talk about where you came from, but when you got that first check in the NFL, mm-hmm. what was that moment like that you had made it to the point that this significant amount of money was made out to Hakeem Nicks?
Right. Honestly, and this is the honest truth, I didn't even think about it. I was so more like, you know, they just drafted me first round. I got to show up. I got to make sure I represent. Yeah, I got to represent for Carolina. Yeah, I got to represent for my family. I got to represent. So that was more my mentality going in. I knew the money was going to come at that time. I was like, I'm in the mix of it now, so whatever's going to come, going to come. You know, I ain't – shoot. Before that, the biggest check I ever seen probably was the Pell Grant. You know what I mean? So, but until then, so I didn't really know. You know, I was just like, I knew what, you know, people was whispering, the financial people was telling me, you know, saying, hey, man, you got enough money now, you can be okay for life if you do this. Or if you do this, you put your money in away, start your gen worth. So when you turn this age, you pay yourself back. So, you know, I took heed to all of that. That's why I'm safe now, you know, and okay now. But it was just I had the people around me, man, trying to guide me in the right direction.
How do you know who to trust?
I never fully trust nobody. Always have somebody watching somebody. That would be my advice to all the younger guys, because that's probably where I lacked at. I kind of put my trust out there a little bit too much. But, you know, experience is the best teacher. You know, that's, I was once told from my father, hey, son, experience the best teacher. So,
for people who don't know the Hakeem Nicks story, where did Hakeem Nicks come from?
Well, started in Philly, in Philadelphia. Moved down south, and I'm going to give you an abbreviated version, you know. Moved down south, met my dad, and from there, you know, I was 10 years old, signed up for football. And it was on, like, the west side of Charlotte, you know, history. I had older brothers with a history of already getting in trouble in that side of town and whatnot. So my dad wanted to move me. Once I got here, he moved from that side of town to another side of the town. And it was just, growing up in poverty, and, you know, I'm sure I wasn't the only one. You know, it's a lot of us that make it up out of there. But it make you who you are today, too. So, you know, I like the way I came up, man. It made me tough. I can instill that toughness and, you know, into my son and my kids and, you know, my daughters and man, just show them what I came from.
The line's pretty thin between I'm going to go hang out with my friends and do what they're doing, and I don't know if that's the right thing to do. I'm going to try to stay out of trouble.
Right.
Why did you decide to stay out of trouble rather than just, I mean, that's your friends doing it.
Man, I'm scared to get in trouble. To this day, I'm still scared to get in trouble. I don't play with trouble, man. I think it's because I seen what my brothers went through. I seen police, you know, at a young age, you know, taking people out of houses and stuff like that. And, you know, just being in the neighborhood, seeing, have friends in the neighborhood that had older brothers and seeing them get into things. And, you know, I was just like, yeah. I'm gonna stick to these sports.
Are your kids? I know your kids are still. Some of them are still pretty young. Are they into athletics? Do they like participating?
All down to my youngest shooting a basketball.
Nice,
like, man. They all. I told you about my 12-year-old in gymnastics. She's top of the line. I'm not just saying that because she's my daughter, but she's really awesome in gymnastics. And my son. He already dunking, hanging on the rim, and he 5 years old. Every day, you know, he know how to do the ladder drill, the cone drills. He catching already. Yeah, he's advanced. He a big little something too.
Do we need to get a, just have a spot ready in the class of like 2035 or whatever it is?
Go ahead and have it ready. He coming.
Are you worried? I guess about the way you came up made you who you are.
Right.
They're coming up different.
Mm-hmm.
Are you worried at all that somehow they're missing something that made you who you are?
Nah, because it's all in the raising. You know, it's all in the raising and all in the teaching. So, and you know, you let them know where you came from. You know, my kids know where I come from. They know, you know, the cloth I come from. You know, they know their family as well. You know, so they know my family. So, you know, my family's very close. So they know where we come from.
Akeem, you had the wide receiver room at Carolina's football facility named after you after a generous donation. Why was that important for you to be in part of that?
Yeah, man. So for me, it was just, man, I wanted to be on the right side of history. When that opportunity came my way, I was just like, you know what? I can do this. You know, I can do this, man. I would like the wide receiver room to be named after me. You know what I mean? So I feel like I put the time in. My play spoke for it, you know, spoke for itself on both levels. Well, all three levels, high school, college, and the pro level. Mm-hmm. You know, always strayed away from trouble, never been in no trouble. Man, I always just kept my name clear, man. I'm a positive, upbeat guy. Everybody love me.
What's it like to walk into Keenan and see your name on the wall?
Man, it's awesome. You know, it's awesome, man. And it's like that for me on all levels, you know, from my high school to here, and then even at the Giants, you know, seeing my name, see my picture, Super Bowl picture up on the wall, and, you know, seeing my name up there by the trophy. And, you know, it's just, you know, right now I'm still, you know, I'm 33, so I'm still, you know, a young man. So I'm like, yeah, that's cool. But I know once I get older and look back on it, I'm be like, yo, that's, yeah. My kids gonna see it.
Do you still have your Super Bowl ring?
Of course.
Where? What do you do with it?
Man, it's well, I bring it out like special times, but it's in my I got a little vase for it, right with my bowl game ring and my high school championship ring.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
When the Super Bowl comes on TV, does that seem like another life to you, or does that seem like yesterday?
It feel like yesterday, but it's not. I know it wasn't yesterday. You know what I'm saying? Like, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it feel like yesterday, but it's like, yeah, nah, it wasn't yesterday. Yes. Well, we coming up on, what, 10 years? Because I was 23 when I won the Super Bowl. It's 10 years. Jeez. Might have made me feel like I'm old in a second.
Where'd you get that sweatshirt? I've never seen that one before.
Oh, man, I got this right on Franklin Street.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
That's a sweet sweatshirt. I mean, it probably looks better on Akeem Nicks than it would on me, but I'm just saying that it's a good look.
Old Carolina closet, man.
Like just that.
All Carolina stuff.
Well, and he's got the sweet Jordans with it. I mean, he's got the whole thing. You wouldn't have this whole
No, I could going. Not pull off that the ensemble. It looks good on Akeem.
You'd look like you were trying to look like Akeem Nicks.
Yeah, that's right.
What is the toughest catch you ever made?
Oh.
When you think of, all right, that's one that I can't believe I did. What's on there? Because then we're going to all go look it up on YouTube.
Right, right. Okay. See, now it's a couple of them that probably don't nobody even.
That's really okay.
Know.
That's all right. That's all right.
So it was, and I had just seen this on Twitter. The Giants had reposted a game from us playing the Rams on a Monday night. And I was running up the left sideline, and I caught it with like two fingers with my left hand because he was holding my right arm. But initially in the game, they said I had stepped out of bounds, but then they went back and looked at it. And said that I was in bounds, so they gave me credit afterwards. So I was like, "Damn, that would have been number one on top 10." You know, but so that was a good one. That was just one that I probably, you know, I think about because it don't get a lot of recognition. But the ones that we know, I'm gonna start with college, that Duke game, catching it on my helmet. I ain't know how that happened. It just happened like that. And
man, I've forgotten about that one until you said it right there.
Pressing right up against my head.
Oh, yeah.
Because he was holding my left arm down.
Why are people always trying to hold Akeem's arms down?
Because that's the only way you can cover him.
That's the only way you can not make the catch.
Yeah, then obviously the behind the back. And then in the NFL, I would probably say I was 3 for 3 on Hail Marys.
Is that right?
Yeah. I was 3 for 3. So the first one was the one against Green Bay.
Yep.
And then I had one against Seattle, and then I had one against San Diego Chargers. Well, they LA Chargers now, but yes.
When you catch so many Hail Marys that you can't quite remember which one and which team it's against.
So I would say probably all three Hail Marys.
When you're going down to catch the Hail Mary, what's the key to do it? I mean, like, you're obviously good at it. What do you know how to do that other guys don't know how to do?
So this is the thing. We practice this like a play. You know, that was a play for us.
Yep.
So every week, Coach Coughlin, when we're going over game scenarios on Saturdays, we would have our last minute plays, win the game plays, and we would practice it, and we would always jog down to our landmarks, jog to our landmarks, and to where it was just ingrained in us. So when we had to do it, it was just like, oh, yeah, running right here, four yards deep in the end zone, you know, right on top of the number, somewhere around this area.
Right.
Hey. Jump ball, get it.
Akeem, man, first of all, it's awesome to see you. Thanks so much for coming over. It's so great that you're here and part of Carolina football, and we really appreciate your time.
Hey, man, thanks for having me, man. I'm glad I'm here. Standing in your heart is where I want to be and long to be. I bet I may as well try.
We appreciate Clint's time. We appreciate Akeem's time. Carolina Insider, brought to you in part by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, reminding you to practice your 3 W's, wear, wait, wash. We resolve to keep North Carolina healthy. Adam, as I said, we should have made Virginia wait.
Yeah. Well, we said in advance.
I didn't actually say that.
Well, we said in advance, we accept the fact that we bear responsibility for the performance,
yep.
And we messed it up.
So,
I think, Adam, we're going to reboot Wear, Wait, Watch one more time here.
We just don't know when.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe Louisville's the wear. Maybe Secret Team X is the wear.
The next time the Heels take the court for a game,
it's going to be wear time. Then wait, then wash. So, thank you, Blue Cross and Blue Shield. Let's keep North Carolina healthy.
See, that's why Rebecca Black is such a champion.
Mm.
Because she
came, her consistency.
She came right to the precipice of falling off the pod, but she fought back to stay on.
Man.
Wear, wait,
what
wash.
What a dark day that was.
Yeah. Well, Wear, Wait, Wash is right there on the edge. Does it have the toughness and the want to? Because we shouldn't have to coach effort.
That's right.
To hang in there. It's up to you, Wear, Wait, Wash.
Yeah.
We don't make the lineup. You make the lineup.
Yeah. Rebecca Black's been through some adversity on the pod and has survived.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rebecca Black, Tar Heel Bird, and the Potties. All these things.
All great champions.
Yeah. They fight through things and survive.
Yeah.
Adam, we're, of course, brought to you by UNC Health as well. Whoa. So I'm getting my wear, well, weight, wash, all the W's. Dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. See their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. Now, Adam, we normally, of course, on Friday's show have the champions watch, and I think we need to have a looking back champion celebration brought to you by UNC Health on this show, Adam, because as we have said, the Tar Heels dominate the collegiate tennis world, and after the women took home the indoor national title last weekend, the guys said, "We're not anything you can do, we can do better." And they took home a title too. So both those programs taking home the indoor national championships. The men defeated Baylor this past weekend in the championship round.
That makes Carolina the first athletic department since Stanford in 2000 to hold the men's and the women's title at the same time.
That's awesome.
I'd like to suggest to the ITA indoor championship, maybe play the championship match first, and then play the consolation matches.
Yeah.
Because this was another late one that didn't start until I think around 10:05, 10:15 Eastern. But a great win for men's tennis. They stomped Baylor. Our good friend William Blumberg played well.
Yeah, he set the pace.
Yep.
Winning on winning match one.
Number one singles.
Yep.
So, look, we've been saying this since the fall. There's a bunch of Carolina teams this spring that have a legitimate chance to win a national championship. Also this weekend, women's lacrosse won, men's lacrosse won, wrestling got a top 25 win over Virginia, women's basketball won, gymnastics won. They beat the pack.
Yeah, and they're ranked. The gymnastics team is ranked. I know it really is impressive, and this isn't a hot take about the Tar Heels, but Carolina's really good in a lot of sports. And, I mean, men's and women's lacrosse are both national championship hopefuls. I think women's lacrosse probably is a favorite for that. We know field hockey, and they're going to be competing again in the spring for the NCAA title because of the weird COVID year. The soccer's are championship caliber programs year in and year out. The tennis's have elevated themselves. I mean, Carolina's always been good, but I think they have taken that next step to now being right there at the top of the national conversation year in and year out, both on the men's and women's side. It is impressive what the Tar Heels, and I'm sure I left someone out, but it's just impressive what the Tar Heels have been able to do.
The tennises, which we had already talked about, and it's not normal.
Didn't I just talk about the tennises?
What?
You weren't listening to me, Adam.
Yes, I was. No, I wasn't. I was thinking about what I was going to say. It's not normal to have this many good programs. I think we take it for granted because you've gotten used to it with Carolina, but normally you have your flagship program and then the rest are okay.
Yeah.
Carolina's got a half dozen flagship programs who all could think of themselves that way, including the tennises. I don't know if you mentioned them or not.
Have we talked about tennis yet?
What about Sam Paul and that men's tennis team? They just won the national title.
Okay, Adam, you ready to go to your list?
Okay.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Let's start off with tennis. We haven't talked about that yet.
Hey, Adam, big win for tennis this past weekend.
Jones, we jinxed Australia on the last pod.
Yep.
We said that they filmed Name That Tune in Australia because they've got COVID under control. What happens the day the episode comes out? Shut down the Australian Open, 5-day snap quarantine there in Sydney because they had a rare strain that originated in Britain or something. Look, don't be talking to England.
Yeah. You know who they need right now? Randy.
Yeah, Randy needs to give him some
advice. And I'm not talking about just a drum solo, sir. We need some words.
So we apologize, Australia. That was hashtag power of the pod in reverse. Michael Jordan gave $10 million to establish two health clinics in Wilmington. That was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, $10 million. Hey, nice job, Michael.
Yeah, I guess. He was probably like, somebody came to him and was like, what do you think about doing this? How much? $10 million? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's fine. All right.
Sounds like a good cause.
Here, hold on. Do you take dollar bills? Future scheduling news is always exciting. Carolina has to go to Syracuse, allegedly, on March 1st. New York's now allowing fans in sporting venues, which they hadn't been before. So Syracuse is trying to work out having fans at the Carrier Dome. When Carolina goes there, Jones, you ain't gonna believe this. So get ready. Syracuse athletes had a party at which people were not wearing masks.
Let me just tell you. So we got a couple of comments about how feisty hashtag potty mouth Adam was on Friday's show. You don't even know.
Yeah. It'll be on the last podcast.
I took out a fair amount of feistiness in that one. And, yeah, let's just say it was too hot for TV in here.
Yeah. Sports Illustrated still exists, and they did a story on – well, that's it. That's the list item. Sports Illustrated still exists. They did a story on Gonzaga. Look, Gonzaga's the best team this year, but I think people are getting a little over the top with Gonzaga. Here's our good friend Dan Monson. The Long Beach State coach who, don't forget, used to be the coach
at Gonzaga. Yeah, I was about to say, former coach at Gonzaga.
And so he had this quote, I'm always amazed at how we think Gonzaga has reached the ceiling, but there does not seem to be one, and that's the most amazing thing about it. Look at Duke and North Carolina. Over the last 20 years, they've all had an ebb and flow. Gonzaga just continues to climb. Well, I mean, in those 20 years you're talking about, Carolina won 3 national championships, and Gonzaga's been to 1 Final Four ever in the history of the team.
Right. And, you know, if you want to add Duke in there, too, you know, they've won, what, 2 in that time period, right?
Probably.
And so
that's 25% of the championships in the time frame you're talking about.
Yeah. And I think it's, look, Gonzaga's really, really good. No one is suggesting that Gonzaga isn't really, really good. But from January 1st to March 1st, they're going to win every single game they play because they are in a conference that isn't very good. And that's not their fault. You should credit them for getting as good as they are, considering that they are in that conference. It's just a fact, though. So, yeah, they're going to have a bunch of wins every year because they're good with a good coach. And you've got about 18 to 20 wins that you're just going to get because you're playing Pacific every game. So, again, that's not their fault, but it's just the truth. And to your point, yes, Gonzaga's been to 1 Final Four, which is good for them. Tar Heels were happy that they were there, had a great time with them. But let's not act like they're not quite in the Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas conversation just yet. Let's do something before they're in that conversation for the all-time programs of college basketball.
Well, don't just let them do something. Let them do something
over and over and over and over again.
With everyone gunning for them, playing a steady schedule over that time and winning multiple national championships and going to multiple Final Fours. They are the best team this year. They should win. We'll find out what people really think about them if they don't win, and then we have to have a whole lot of discussions about what happened to Gonzaga. Mark Few's a great coach. He's one of the best coaches in the country. We've been to Gonzaga. You must be an incredible recruiter to get people to go there, which is why their roster is so heavily international. They're a great, great team. But let's don't act like, well, I mean, they're doing stuff Duke and Carolina have never done. Yeah, not winning championships. Troy Rayner sent us an email. Now, I'm going to have to edit this because I don't like saying some of these words
Troy
included.
Oh, my gosh. Hashtag potty mouth Troy.
Troy says, a former coworker gave me some advice 15 plus years ago that I always remember and take to heart frequently.
Oh, is this a little Randy inspiration?
Yes.
Oh, nice.
Troy wasn't sure if it was pot appropriate until recent events brought it to its obvious relevance. It only takes one, oh darn, to ruin a whole bunch of attaboys.
Yeah.
Willie Robertson said that before Randy probably stole it and used it on a future episode.
Yep.
Thank you, Troy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I feel like I'm ready to go out and win this gold medley right now.
I can name that tune in one note.
I had an incredible run on the most recent episode.
Really?
But I think the contestants were bad, and it made me feel better about myself. Like Gonzaga playing in their conference.
Well, so, you know, they've been doing a bunch of celebrity Wheel of Fortune here recently, and I was feeling really good because I could get all the puzzles, and then I realized, wait a second, this is like Teen Jeopardy, I think. These aren't the real puzzles that would be on Wheel of Fortune. These are the dumbed-down celebrity version so Joel McHale can feel good about himself.
Yeah, it's like when you go on a big run on High School Jeopardy and you don't know if you should feel good or bad about yourself. Hey, hi, I'm Don. I'd like to wager it all on this Daily Double. I'm on fire.
You've got like eight in a row. You're walking around your living room with like the finger cannons. Like, pow, 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 pow. Nobody can touch Dad right now, baby. Woo! What is awesome?
But then it gets to like physics and you don't know any. You're like, well, God, you know.
Is that what they're teaching in school today?
It's not in my wheelhouse.
Teach important things. Okay, so I have a couple things too, Adam. I was just looking at my list and it's so ridiculous. Okay. I don't even know. I don't know what this is. It's not really a how can you justify that necessarily. It's more like an old man yelling at clouds here.
So it should be on my list.
Yeah. So it was Saturday night after the Tar Heels and Virginia. And so I was not in a very good mood, went home, got everybody to bed and sat down on the couch, had a glass of wine. I was like, I'm just going to chill out for a second. Well, I'm flipping around and I see, don't judge me, Adam, I see Wedding Crashers on some channel. And I was like, yeah, I like this movie. It's a funny movie. I'm going to sit and watch this for a little bit. And then I thought, you know what? I have 878 streaming services, so instead of picking this movie up halfway through and having to watch the commercials, I'm just going to go find it on one of these streaming services that I have. Well, Adam, I went to Netflix. I went to Amazon Prime. I went to Disney Plus, which obviously it wasn't going to be on, but I thought I'd give it a shot anyway.
Worth a
just
chance.
In case. I'm never quite sure. Does Disney own it? I think the chances are like 50-50. And so it's not on any of them. Now, I don't have Hulu, so maybe it was on Hulu. I don't know. But Adam, why is it that in the year 2021, when I have 48 different streaming services and I want to watch a relatively well-known movie, that it's not available to me? Just, what am I paying all these things for if the one movie that I want to watch the one time isn't on any of them?
Wedding Crashers is not on Hulu.
Yeah, so that wouldn't even have made a difference. Now, I could have paid for it on Amazon Prime.
Hey,
are we doing? I'm already paying. I'm already paying. I shouldn't have to pay again.
I feel like the world is ripe for a streaming service in which I get to build the content. I don't want your content. I want the content I want. And then I'll tell you what I want, and you go out and secure it, and then I'll watch it whenever I want. What's wrong with that?
I feel like Amazon Prime is the closest thing to that, but then they make you pay for some of them.
Wedding Crashers also not on HBO Max, Jason Kyler.
Yeah, one on HBO Max, because I have that too. I mean,
who's got it?
Where is it? Do I need to go buy the Blu-ray? Is that where we are at this point?
I'd like to rent Wedding Crashers from this Blockbuster.
Yeah. Do I just need to go to the Video Hut and go get it and then return it two nights later? I'll do it.
So did you watch it?
Yes. So I was able. So now on the cable thing, you've got the thing where you can start it over.
Yeah.
You know?
I've never done that. How was it?
Then you have to, but you have to sit through the commercials. You can't fast forward. So that's all right. I enjoyed the first like 30 minutes of it, which are the best part of it anyway, and then called it a night.
So after all that effort to watch the whole thing.
Well, I would have watched the whole thing if I hadn't sat through the commercials.
Yeah, that's not worth it.
What is this? What am I, in prison? Shouldn't have to watch commercials?
I've never done the start over. I've always seen it, and I've thought, I might like to start over, but I never have.
No. I like the option. I don't like the commercials.
Well, I want the start over option on all the shows.
We're brought to you by... No.
I want the start over option on all the shows. Why do they pick the ones I get
to
start
over? Yeah, I
don't
know. I don't know why some of them do and some of them don't. I'd like to take a quick vacation from life, Adam. Mm. Have you, for any reason, here recently, seen any Charlotte Hornets basketball on TV?
No.
Okay. As you know, we're big NBA house at my house.
Sure.
So if there's an NBA game on, my son is going to watch some of it. Well, what we have found is that the Hornets, pretty much every game, at least the home games, are on one of these, like, deep in the menu spectrum channels that it doesn't even say it's the Hornets. Like, a lot of times it says it's Shogun Fights. But it's actually the Hornets. So, we've seen them a lot. Now, one downside of this, Gerald Henderson is part of their, like, pre-half post team.
What?
Yeah, so I don't like that part. What I do like, though, and I don't even know the guy's name, but their TV play-by-play announcer is incredible. This dude, like, think prime Gus Johnson, but he's just for the one team. And so, you know, like, if the Spurs or something get a basket, he's like, and there's a basket by Tim Duncan, or whoever is playing for the Spurs now.
Because Tim Duncan has recently played on the Spurs.
Yeah. LaMarcus Aldridge. I think he's on the Spurs.
But he gets all excited when Kelly Trepuka makes one?
Yeah, exactly. But, like, I mean, there was one where Cody Zeller had a dunk here recently, and he was like, Cody! I mean, it is an experience. And half the fun is just listening to this dude lose his mind when the Hornets do something.
Who's with him, or is he?
Dale Curry is the color guy. It's the color analyst.
Hmm.
So it is an enjoyable experience.
Is it Mick?
It is not Mick Mixon.
That's it. Kind of sounded like Mick when you were talking about the Cody Zeller dunk.
Cody. It's really awesome. So check it out if you get the chance.
Okay.
Okay. Last thing. So, Adam, I know you know this because you sent me a Valentine's, but Sunday was Valentine's Day.
Okay.
And so we, at my house, were going to get some stuff for the kids for Valentine's Day. And so it had been ordered. You can imagine how much, how involved I was in this process. It was ordered and brought to the house. And there were some balloon, like, I think it was like balloon animals and maybe some balloon that you popped and then candy and all this stuff came out. And
was it Cinco de Mayo or Valentine's Day?
Yeah, it was a quinceañera party, actually. But so the person who delivered the stuff delivered it on Saturday. And it's clearly like some kind of locally owned company, I think, that does like stuff for kids, like kids' parties or whatever. And so all of a sudden on Saturday, we were at the house. My daughter was upstairs in her room. My son was downstairs, I think maybe watching a basketball game. And I hear my daughter yell all of a sudden, "Someone really weird is in the driveway." And so we look, and now this is unconfirmed. somehow my kids came to the understanding that the woman who was delivering the stuff was dressed like a clown. Now, whether or not the woman was actually dressed like a clown, unsure, unconfirmed, unknown. But so all of a sudden, it was just like this yelling between my two kids. And it was like, there's a clown here. Ah, like full screams. Like, my son is terrified of clowns. I didn't know this. I think the internet has ruined clowns for the youth. And so they thought like some crazy clown was coming to the house. And so we just had this screaming back and forth, like high-pitched, I'm in danger screams from my kids because they thought some clown was coming in to attack them. When in reality, A, I'm unclear if the woman was dressed as a clown, and B, she was dropping off balloon animals. So, whoo, let me just tell you, it was quite a few minutes of danger there in our house.
I just wanted to drop off the balloon animals I had made.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to start this frenzy.
Yeah. Woo, what a moment it was. What a weekend. Laughed, cried, attacked by clowns. Couldn't find my movie. Cody! We're brought to you in part by the Pinehurst Resort. Susan, Pinehurst.com. Lock in this weekend getaway.
The weather's been perfect to head out to Pinehurst.
Yeah, who doesn't want to be down there? Pinehurst number 2, Pinehurst number 4, there's the Cradle, North and South Bar, Pinehurst Brewing Company. All waiting for you right there in the Cradle of American Golf. Pinehurst.com, and plan your visit. Adam, anything else?
No.
Okay. Well, who knows what's happening with the Tar Heels? We don't know. But we do know they're at least scheduled to play Saturday against Louisville. So we'll be with you again before then. We'll preview that matchup. Maybe there's a game we can talk about. Don't know. We'll have a great guest, of course, and more. Don't forget, video pod coming up on Thursday. And I'm just going to wet your beak a little bit here. We've got a special pod coming up in a couple of weeks. A little special edition of the pod on the way. I'm not going to tell you what it's about, but it's going to be good.
It's a very special episode.
But for now, we're going to let Clint Gwaltney, if we have a big grit from him, which I think we do, but I can't 100% confirm. I think we do. We're going to let Clint and Akeem Nix and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Clint Gwaltney, and I'm a Tar Heel. See you later, Big Grits.
I'm Akeem Nix. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network, brought to you by Harris Teeter, where Tar Heel fans shop for groceries.